From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Thank you for all the support you've given to President Cullerton and myself in this epic struggle with Governor Rauner. Governor Rauner wants to change collective bargaining. How do you feel? Governor Rauner wants to use the government to lower wages. How do you feel? Governor Rauner wants Illinois to go right to work. How do you feel? Thank you.
Well, that certainly goes on a lot in Springfield. You know, I think there's several thousand protesters there right now. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people. You know what? If yelling and chanting and protesting solved problems, Illinois wouldn't have any problems. I mean, we have a lot of that.
That's Governor Bruce Rauner, and he was referring to a rally that took place, a big union rally, estimated 8,000 people appearing in Springfield this week, where the House Speaker Michael Madigan showed off his cheerleading skills there. Well, we'll talk about that and a whole lot more this week. Another meeting along with those rallies. Is it getting Illinois any closer to a state budget agreement? We'll chat about it coming up on today's State Week. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. Brian Mackey, IPR reporter. And our guest, Doug Finke of Gatehouse Newspapers. And Doug, thanks for being with us again.
Glad to be here.
And I'm Sean Crawford here in Springfield. Amanda, I'm going to start with you. That rally was quite an event that took place. I mean, that was one of the bigger ones we've seen in recent years.
Yeah, it really was astounding. Lots of bright colors. It wasn't just one union. It was a whole lot of them. In fact, I have a page, some that, frankly, I don't know if I'd ever really heard of or thought about existing as unions, from every union from the roofers to the Screen Actors Guild to theatrical stagehands and the United Food and Commercial Workers. As I said, that 8,000 estimate does come from the Secretary of State's office. The union's trying to say it's a little bit more. And, of course, advocates of Governor Bruce Rauner trying to downplay that. The statement that we heard from Governor Bruce Rauner, he was not there to hear Madigan or the union members' cries. He instead had business roundtables down in southern Illinois. But the message from those union members and labor was pretty loud and clear, Sean.
Yeah, and Doug Finke, let me go to you, because they all seem to have one common theme, those people that came to that rally, and that was they are not fans of Bruce Rauner and some of his policies, especially regarding organized labor.
Exactly, and I thought it was interesting that Madigan, in his speech to this group, ticked off one by one the components of the governor's turnaround agenda that Rauner said have to be part of any kind of budget solution, which is changing local collective bargaining rights for public employees and workers' comp changes and pension reform, prevailing wage laws. And, of course, the union members yelled no to each one of these things. Madigan said, as we heard in the opening soundbite, do you want this? They said no. The idea that I think it just basically reinforced the position that Madigan has taken all along, that he does not want these things to be part of a budget solution. He wants the budget to be handled by itself and deal with these what Rauner calls reforms or his turnaround agenda, do that at another time and another day.
Well, can you clarify,
reinforce that.
Amanda,
I'm
just going to say, can you clarify for us that a speaker came out of a meeting with the other legislative leaders and the governor? There was some reporting going on that Madigan had sort of opened the door to some of these same ideas that he was deriding before the before that union rally.
Well, the Republican legislative leaders came out of that meeting and said that Madigan had agreed to appoint members to a working group that would ostensibly try to find some kind of compromise on these various components of the governor's turnaround agenda. And Madigan, in fact, did that. But, within 5 minutes of this meeting being concluded, his office also issued a written statement from Madigan saying, once again, that we should not be doing turnaround agenda, non-budget items as part of the budget solution, and that in the past, when they have reached agreement on components of a budget, It's been when the governor has dropped or not insisted that his turnaround agenda be part of it.
Right. I think there are two things that I would like to get across here from both of those questions. First of all, Sean, when it comes to this leaders' meeting, you did have this optimistic take from both Senate President John Cullerton and House Leader Jim Durkin. Durkin on that Madigan was willing to appoint members, and then also John Cullerton said that he had gone in with the goal of Rauner being open to revenue, and that was what he wanted to be sure of. In a sense, I think to observers, at least my take was neither of those things are that totally surprising, or perhaps it also is telling that that in itself it was thought of by the leaders as significant, because we've had for quite some time now Governor Bruce Rauner saying open in the open and in public that he is open to new revenue. Now, he does, of course, not get into any specifics, as evidently was the case during the leaders' meeting. Still won't talk about what kind of revenue until the turnaround agenda is passed, but he has said that out in the open. He kind of undermines his position when he's out in public by almost dismissing the need for it, and yet he has said it. And then when it comes to Michael Madigan and these working groups, we don't know. We're not privy to how long there's been a call for these working groups and if Madigan, you know, has held off on working from leadership or if this is really a new thing. But it's clear he did have members as part of this budgeteers group that presented the budget framework that has gotten so much attention of late. And at the same time, as Doug said, kind of backstepping on that, Madigan not giving a lot of credence to the budgeteers group. So sure, maybe he'll appoint members. It's just a matter of how much can they speak for him and how much credibility does he lend to any of these things. So it's two steps forward, in a sense, two steps back, as we so often see.
Well, didn't his statement, the speaker's statement that he released after the meeting, say in essence, yes, we're sending these, I'm going to send people to the working group,
right,
and they're going to explain how the House has voted on this stuff in the past? So physically the bodies will be there, but mentally it doesn't seem like there's much change.
Yeah, Brian Mackey.
Exactly. Right. I mean, just because you appoint people doesn't mean they're going to participate or they're authorized to do anything.
And Brian Mackey, let me bring you in because, pardon me, but I just do not feel as though another week has passed here. We're inching closer to that, you know, that big deadline of May 31st, and it doesn't seem like we're getting anywhere closer to working out some type of an agreement.
No, obviously it's not surprising that things get solved in the last week or two of session, but as the days tick by, it just makes it harder and harder to believe that, people have, they go to these meetings and we're not really privy to what is said unless, you know, the governor happens to share things that people confide in him or people come out and characterize what the other people say. But, we're just left to look on the outside. And from that perspective, it just looks like nobody is budging, right? The speaker, as we said, put out this statement, kind of digging in his heels. The governor has, I think somebody said earlier, he sort of undermines his own positions because he has been so adamantly anti-tax. Now, he says he would consider raising revenue if his so-called turnaround agenda items pass. But I think that there's a trust problem because Democrats, have watched Governor Rauner operate both as governor and as a candidate. And there's often this dark money that kind of flows to support his positions at convenient times. We saw that with Kirk Dillard in the Republican primary. A mysterious group came in and started attacking him. I think that people are worried that, yes, he may sort of in public go along with this tax increase, but obviously that would still be used to beat up on candidates during the November election.
Well, we talked last...
And really, when you get back to it, so much of this, sorry, Sean, so much of this really is about money. I think that's part of where you're having really Democrats dig in their heels and being cooperative. They've never, yes, they've worked with Republican governors, but never one as well-funded as this and who could, just trample them monetarily when you get to campaigns. And circling back to that rally, that was more significant to me in a sense, Madigan's statements there, than this statement that came and was, emailed by his spokesperson. It was the normally, quiet, hanging back House Speaker. Instead, as Sean, you phrased it, his cheerleader came out, and it was Speaker Madigan, who has, we talk about Democrats and their allegiances with unions and labor, but in the past, labor has actually had a lot of support for Republican candidates and has had frustrations with Democratic leaders who helped and were big cheerleaders, to use that word again, of the pension overhaul, granted one that has now been tossed, but nonetheless, that was, you know, passed by the House Speaker. The House Speaker came to the rescue of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, at a time where you had a lot of the labor organizations and more kind of Democratic allied groups saying, no, we want money for our programs. And yet he got up there and was treated with, you know, cheers and yells and those resounding responses to each of his calls. And I think it's was this sign of, okay, they may not have the money of Rauner, but they are united and strong, and Rauner has brought them together more than ever. And you saw that even more evident. Who got the most cheers? When his name was announced, he didn't even give a speech, but Senator Sam McCann was treated truly like a hero by everybody in labor when it was said that he was the sole Republican in attendance.
One of the kind of, I don't know if this would be a trivial question, but one of the things that occurred to me seeing the footage of the huge rally, I thought to myself, I wonder how many of these folks voted for Bruce Rauner back in November of 2014. Because you recall it, as Amanda said, Madigan in particular was on the outs with the unions, particularly the AFSCME union, the state employees, largest state employees union, because of that pension reform. And they were very adamantly opposed to it. And they were really at odds with the speaker and to a lesser extent with Senator Cullerton, the Senate president, and with Governor Quinn. And as I say, the thought occurred to me, I bet some of these folks actually voted for Bruce Rauner, and they probably now wish they had the opportunity to push the redo button.
That's an excellent point, Charlie, because I've actually heard that 40% of union households, particularly downstate, went for Governor Rauner. You mentioned Governor Quinn and the pension issue. There's also a big Second Amendment concern. Governor Quinn was very strong in his push. Remember, he rewrote, he tried to use his veto powers to rewrite a concealed carry piece of legislation into an assault weapons ban. And if you're a downstate union household, there's a good chance you're a hunting household, and they take firearms very seriously. And so I've heard it could be as high as 40% of union households went for Governor Quinn, Governor Rauner. His margin of victory was not that great in the grand scheme of things. And so, it would be a fascinating thing to poll and get see if you can figure out how much regret there might be.
Well, I would say that if most of this organized labor, especially those that involve state government, I don't know that they trust either side. I mean, certainly Mike Madigan looks a lot better to them than Bruce Rauner up there, and they cheer and everything else. But they have probably felt as though, you know, slap in the face a few times from the Democrats as well. So where do you go if you're a union, you know, a unionized member?
But I think it's interesting that in his year in office, year and a half now, closing up, Rauner, whatever union support he had back in the election, he seems to have driven completely over to Madigan, because Madigan, for better or worse, is kind of seen as the lone person standing in the way of some of these things that Rauner wants as far as collective bargaining and workers' comp reform.
Yeah, I had a Democratic legislator say to me, you know, I never used to really get the Madigan thing and had mixed feelings, and boy, now am I glad he's there.
We talked on this show last week about these working groups. I think we've referred to some of them as the budgeteers. What have we heard this week? Because last week that seemed to dominate a lot of the news, that they have some plan they're going to present to the leaders and all. Does it seem as though that's dead on arrival? Is there anything that's happening with that as we head into really the final, you know, week and a half or so of the legislative session?
Well, there at least is still an outline out there. You know, how much credence you put to this thing kind of depends on your position. Even as the thing was being delivered to the leaders, some House Democrats that I talked to who are part of this process were kind of downplaying expectations. They were saying that, look, it's a plan. We were supposed to come up with a plan. of some kind that would balance revenues and spending and give it to the leaders for their consideration, and then they would get back to us with some further refinement. So it was, at least in many people's minds, it was not anywhere close to a final product. It was not anywhere close to an agreed plan where you could say that all the members of this budget group or even a majority of them agreed with each component, and this was their best recommendation to the leaders. So I don't know that you want to read too much into this thing as kind of the breakthrough final product on a budget.
Well, and I spoke with the speaker on Monday or Tuesday, was it? and he said outright that he thought Democrats would find it, quote, inadequate. So there was this brief bit of optimism, and then I think it very quickly got trampled on.
And they thought it would be inadequate because of the budget cuts. Is that what he had told you?
Yeah, he said, I mean, because let's be clear, there are people that, and particularly Republicans, that say this budget framework was more than double revenue than it was in cuts. And yet the Democratic leader, Madigan, saying that he believed that his party and rank and file legislators wouldn't be on board with the $2.4 billion, I believe it is, in revenue reductions. And that was in a host of areas, and we still don't really have a full list, but it would be everywhere from Medicaid to procurement changes to some of Rauner's desires to push pension costs from the state to universities and school districts. And, you know, who knows what else?
It occurs to me that anybody who has a grasp of basic, like, fourth grade arithmetic realizes that to close the kind of budget deficit the state faces is going to require more revenue, and it's going to require some cuts. But you can't do it all with revenue, and you can't cut that much out of the budget. People talk about, oh, waste, fraud, and abuse. And as I've said many times, there is not a line item in the budget for waste, fraud, and abuse. And the bulk of where the money goes is for programs that people support, elementary and secondary education, health care, services to people who are disabled or who are elderly, vulnerable in our society. Those are the kind of programs that people generally support when they're asked in public opinion polls, do you agree with this? Our prison system. So it's not that there's just a lot of money out there that we could make these cuts, they'd have no impact. We need new revenue. And if you need new revenue, the only place that you can go to really get it is from the income tax or expanding the sales tax base. Our rate is already higher than probably is optimum on the sales tax, but our income tax rates are relatively modest compared to all of our neighboring states but Indiana. And so there's... You have to go where the money is. And so the ultimate solution, if we ever do reach one, will have to involve tax increases.
And the governor seems to be, at least from what we've heard, open to that idea. He wants other things to go with it.
Well, that's because he can do fourth grade arithmetic.
So is it going to be the problem, going to be the cuts to the budget that also might have to be part of it? So are Democrats really going to be the ones that could even sink a plan like that?
Well, if I could just offer one observation, even though everybody has said that it's got to be a combination of cuts and revenue, we've never heard an actual percentage of what that is. So does that mean Rauner would accept a plan that relies on balancing the budget by 50% of it coming from revenue increases and 50% from cuts? Or is he going to want something that achieves a balance through 90% cuts and 10% revenue? You know, just balancing it out, we don't have a real sense of where any of the leaders stand on that blend of revenues and cuts.
And frankly, I don't think it seems like we're anywhere near that conversation at this point, because it does go back to what has been the problem in terms of reaching a deal all along, that as you heard from that rally, Madigan most certainly isn't on board with these pro-business and what labor says is trying to stamp them out agenda, things that Rauner isn't backing away from either. So they're not yet, even at this point, the budgeteers, yes, they presented a framework, one that nobody really has called an actual plan. And so it remains really the whole turnaround agenda is there. I'm not saying that we won't have a budget necessarily, but I would be surprised if we have one that is agreed to by both parties, and we'll see what becomes law.
Yeah, well, and meanwhile, we have a de facto cut of 70% to higher education, and that's a marked improvement from the 100% cut that they'd been experiencing for most of this fiscal year. A lot of areas of social service spending have essentially a 100% cut that's been going on this entire budget year. And if there's never an agreement, as you hear whispers and people fretting that, my goodness, maybe we'll never get an agreement. I think we heard State Representative Lou Lang, who's a member of House Speaker Michael Madigan's Democratic leadership team, saying we may never have a budget under Governor Rauner. And if that's the case, well, then people will have been successful. Both parties will have been successful in colluding to make massive, massive, stupid, by definition, not thought out cuts across huge areas of state government.
Amanda, can you give us the update on social services and anything possibly moving with more money for higher education that's been out there? Is anything happening with that?
So you do have, heading to the governor, a measure that would fully fund the monetary award program that gives grants to low-income students to help pay for college or university. And that is on the way to the governor's desk. He didn't say outright that he would veto it, but it sure as heck appears as if that is the case, given the trepidation and statements from the governor's office and all Republicans, even those representing university communities, voting against it. And also, we have a separate plan that was passed by the Senate that would get universities additional money, bring those up to the 60% mark. Right now, only CSU is funded at that juncture. But the House has not gone forward at all with that plan, so it is stalled. Also apparently stalled is this measure that would get $700 million, the first quote-unquote stopgap for social services not covered by any of those court orders. And once again, the governor hasn't said outright that he would veto it, but he did say that it has drafting errors, and that is why it appears as if he won't sign it into law or is going to continue to sit on it. Drafting errors that, again, in my conversation with Speaker Madigan, he dismissed as utter nonsense.
Let me save a couple of minutes here, because some news broke late in the week regarding the new auditor general. Took over just a few months ago. A former state lawmaker, has been around the budget situation a lot through the years, and that is Democrat Frank Montino. The U.S. Attorney's Office apparently issuing subpoenas to some former campaign workers of his. There's some questions there. Can somebody give me sort of the update of what we know at this point?
Well, we just know it actually follows the Illinois Times. Bruce Rushton reported that campaign workers had been subpoenaed. Good to point out that just because you've been subpoenaed does not necessarily mean that charges will ever be brought. But nonetheless, that was the first real significant movement that we had seen after Republicans really making hay of this and saying they can't trust the Auditor General's reports for the state, given his evident inability, they say, to keep accurate records of campaign spending and, you know, that excess and suspicious activity that went on there. Up until now, Martino hadn't really been saying much. And while the State Board of Elections is looking into it, those meetings have been closed. So we don't really know anything. Nonetheless, did get a statement from Martino's spokesman in response to the published reports that really admitted that there is an investigation going on. And it was the first real time that we had gotten word that that is happening. And also in the statement just saying, because it is ongoing in nature, there won't be any further comment from the Auditor General.
And Amanda, can you give us just in about a minute or so the breakdown of what some of the issues have been before? Maybe we don't know exactly what the U.S. Attorney's Office might be looking at, but there have been questions about his campaign spending.
Yeah, it seems as if the back in his time as a Democratic member of the Illinois House, Frank Montino, of course, had a campaign fund, and that he spent money, like way too much money from what it would appear, at a single gas station, one of these gas stations that does repairs. And it was owned by somebody who's politically involved, and then also funding that went through a bank. And so basically, again, this is all, you know, allegations. Montino has been submitting more and more to the State Board of Elections. But the question is, was this some way to, you know, filter cash to individuals or back to himself? You know, you're only supposed to use your campaign money on certain necessities that are actually campaign related. And so that is basically the question. How possibly would you need that much money in car repairs that you would need to spend these thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars at a gas and car repair station?
That is one unreliable car, apparently. So we'll right. We'll continue to follow that and see what happens. This could be a story that could go throughout the summer months for sure. Time now for our notes from the field. Brian Mackey, let's start with you.
Yeah, there was word this week from the Illinois Review website, conservative news website, that 11 of the 18 members of the Republican Party Platform Committee are looking at removing the one-man, one-woman marriage plank from the official party platform. We heard back in the campaign, of course, Illinois has same-sex marriage now. That ship sailed out of the harbor a few years ago. Governor Bruce Rauner really worked hard to not say anything about this topic. There was a Tribune editorial board session where he just said, no, I'm not going to say, I don't have an opinion, I'm not going to express it. So not entirely surprising that the party is trying to move beyond this issue, but it'll be interesting to see whether there is a fight among some of the diehards who really believe in the traditional definition of marriage.
Charlie Wheeler?
Well, the legislature has sent to the governor legislation that would decriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana. Similar legislation passed last year. The governor sent it back with an amendatory veto, saying he wanted the cap on marijuana, the amount that you could possess, to be reduced, and he wanted the fines to be increased. The legislature basically sent him a new bill that reflects what he asked for. The argument being made is that we shouldn't be cluttering up our jails and occupying our criminal justice system with people who have this relatively small amount of marijuana. We need the resources for other purposes.
And I believe Amanda reported that the governor has not necessarily agreed to sign that, at least at this point. Doug Finke, let's go to you.
The Senate this last week approved a bill providing for automatic voter registration. So when you visit a state office, and for most people it would probably be a driver's facility, and to renew your license, for example, you would automatically be registered to vote unless you tell them you do not want to be registered. It's sort of the opposite of what goes on now. You go into one of these facilities and they say, do you want to register? And you have to proactively say that you do. The idea is this will increase voter registration.
And I want to save just a moment to congratulate our Charlie Wheeler. The SIU Board of Trustees this past week gave him the Distinguished Service Award for mentoring SIU journalism graduates because of his role as director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program. Charlie, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It was a tremendous personal honor for me, obviously, but as I've told other people, I believe it's also recognition for the program. And Southern Illinois University over the years has been a source of very great students coming into the program. And I'm very grateful for the work that the journalism faculty at Southern has done in giving us basically very talented individuals who work hard, take advantage of the opportunities that the program offers here, and then go on to do great things.
Well, members of our broadcast today include Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, and Doug Finke. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org and find us on NPR One. You can look for State Week. The production assistance for our program today provided by Brian Mackey. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.